Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online as Rob Pratton. And with me today, I've got Patrick and Emmett Fury, and they're the creators of Enter the Lodge, the Transmedia presentation of Twin Peaks. So, hello guys.
Hey Robert.
Thanks for having us.
Ah well, it's really good to get you on the show because what you've done, I think, looks very, very interesting. So just maybe if there's, I don't know if there's anyone in the world who's never heard of Twin Peaks, but maybe that would be a good place to start and then tell us how you got into this.
Okay, well, Twin Peaks was a television series on CBS. It started actually. April 8th in 1990, and it was made by David Lynch and his partner Mark Frost, and it was special agent with the FBI named Dale Cooper, played by Kyle MacLachlan, went to this Pacific Northwestern town in Washington State called Twin Peaks to investigate the death of a high school girl named Laura Palmer, and for the first season and a half of its two seasons, it was this big mystery of who killed her and sort of uncovering the dark sort of facets and undertones of this seemingly happy town. And then at the end of the second season, the series got canceled abruptly, and the finale had a bunch of sort of heart-rending cliffhangers, and that was now 24 years ago, almost to the day, and wow. People have kind of been wondering what happened since.
It's a David Lynch movie. It never finishes. He never gets to the end.
Very appropriate. And then, of course, he then made a subsequent movie, which was mostly a prequel, avoiding the whole resolution.
So what made you... it was enormously popular, but what made you guys pick on this as a transmedia experience?
A couple of years ago, I was kicking around the idea of writing a novelty spec of, like, Twin Peaks Season 3, Episode 1, like a TV spec, because I just thought, maybe someone who's tired of reading their 500th spec of The Mentalist, who also happened to be a big fan of that show, might want to pick this one up. It might be intriguing to them. I've produced some web series, like my series Fury of Solace, which had a big sort of social media, transmedia experience with a lot of alternate reality game things, inviting people into the story. And that, super proud of what we did, and a lot of people in the transmedia community really like what we did, but it's very kind of niche, and, it didn't get a whole ton of eyeballs like I wanted. So I thought, I saw Jay Bushman would do these things sometimes at South by Southwest called South by Star Wars, where the first year he just sort of like, they tweeted like the Death Star trench run as if the characters were on Twitter, and I saw how much fun he was having and how many people got into it, and I thought, it'd be fun. Why don't we try and play in this David Lynch's sandbox for this with the fan base that we know exists, and just see and what's the anniversary that just sort of happened? I guess I should explain that. In one of the early episodes, there's this other sort of otherworldly dimension called the Black Lodge, where these evil spirits that come and inhabit people, and that sort of ties into Laura Palmer's murder. And Dale Cooper is something of a psychic, and he has these dreams and visions of this place. And one of his dreams that he had in one of the first episodes was him. He sees Laura, the dead girl, and she says, "I will see you again in 25 years." And the last episode of the show took place on March 26, 1989. So we basically picked up our thing on March 25th, 25 years after when the events of the last episode. Yeah.
That's really good. That's really good.
Yeah, so we transcribed parts of the last two episodes so that we sort of jumped in with pieces that viewers of the show might be familiar with, and then from there started building new content to continue in our season 3.
So how did you go about thinking about extending it in terms of both the writing and the presentation?
Whenever I write a spec of an existing show or jump into, like I said, somebody's sandbox, I I do a really sort of deep study. So I certainly rewatched the series and took a lot of intricate notes and got my hand on as many like deleted scenes as I could. And we watched the film, the prequel film Fire Walk With Me, and read the original script with a bunch of deleted scenes there. And there's some interesting supplementary material. Like there was a thing called the Twin Peaks Access Guide that the writers wrote somewhere in the second season, which is sort of like, it's like a town pamphlet that you might find at like a hotel, and it's really dense thing with a lot of interesting information. And even the trading cards that they put out had some interesting factoids that were worth noting. So you know, just kind of like immersing ourselves in that, and like I'm joking, I'm kind of like a walking concordance of Twin Peaks knowledge right now. So
I can imagine, bloody hell, that's amazing.
That's kind of how we went about that, and then we just kind of, I mean, I'll say, story-wise, there's a lot of, like, really subtle details that are really for the, some sort of, like, crossover type details, but also just for the fans who would know them, but it's not exactly what you'd call fan service, because we're not making it easy on any of these people. Like, you know, it was a David Lynch drama. So, we just tried to do what we thought was most dramatically interesting. And really, people have been almost just glowingly praised. It's a little bit surprising, and hopefully we're not jinxing it, but people are just happy that it's here and that it's back. And, I know one guy tweeted like, you know, following all the characters from Twin Peaks makes me feel like I'm part of the town,
Yeah, exactly. Right. Really good.
And I know, like, this is Patrick, by the way, in terms of sort of developing the story as it continues, like, that's been happening for several years now. Like, we'll talk on the phone, or we'll talk while we're on Xbox Live, or, you know, whatever we're doing, and just sort of, like, develop. And it was really sort of an element of just deciding what plot lines we'd like to see, whether for particular characters or for particular arcs and things like that. Then in terms of presentation, in some ways, once we decided we had to do it by a certain deadline, that's when those things all started falling into place, because getting the broader story was a lot harder. But, you know, there were some initial discussions, for instance, as to whether we would just sort of write scenes, but the dialogue would take place via Twitter, which is effectively what we've done. Or if the characters would actually behave as though they were using Twitter, even though it didn't exist at the time. So, like, there were even, from a technical perspective, there were discussions as to even how we would do the presentation once we got that far.
Yeah, to a certain degree, Twitter is the medium that we're using, because, you know, A, Twitter didn't exist, but B, you know, these characters wouldn't be tweeting at each other from the same location. So it's not technically following the rules of Twitter. Even though sometimes it is if we interact with other fans. But and I should also mention that Patrick's based out of Washington, D.C., and I'm in Los Angeles. So it's been a whole sort of cross-country kind of enterprise. He happens to be visiting me in L.A. right now, so we're here in the same physical space for the first time working on this together. Yeah.
So how many – it's interesting with how you bring people into the story. So let's just tell people how many platforms it's on and where the sort of focus is, or where people should go first.
Well, it is primarily Twitter. We have we're also using Foursquare pretty extensively, and then other than that, I think Annie Blackburn is on Pinterest, but she's sort of the only that's sort of an outlier. But so, you know, we definitely, as I've been doing these things and getting into transmedia storytelling, it's really important to me for like the sort of events to be archived, which is why I just love the site Storify, because when I started Fury of Solace, my web series, nothing like that existed. So I just had to like favorite a bunch of tweets and then hit print screen a bunch of times and paste them into Photoshop and then sort of front them together. But Storify, you can just drag and drop the tweets into this timeline, and then they give you an embed code and you can put it on your site. So basically, yeah, there's our website, enterthelodge.com, where you can see all of the Storifies, and there's one for each scene, and you can sort them by day and by character. We do story 5 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday, and this third season we're doing is 4 weeks total. We're about halfway through the third week, so there'll be one more week after this. It definitely has cliffhangers as well. So, you know, we have more story broadly planned, but there would certainly be a hiatus during which we would not only have to prepare all the content, but recruit new people, because it's a little, this is one of those things where, like, we're both here doing it, and I still don't quite understand how we're doing it.
And are you, like, have you got all the tweets written and scheduled and all ready to go, or how's the process?
So we've, basically we've been uploading a week at a time. So right now everything through week three, which is currently going on, is scheduled, and through that we have about over 3,700 tweets for the first 3 weeks. We'll probably be pretty close, if not past 5,000, once the 4 weeks are over. And so we're basically right now we're in the process of finalizing the fourth week, and then once we have everything set up and ready to go, we'll then do that fourth upload in advance of next Tuesday. And then aside, you know, unless there's any tweaks that have to happen, it'll pretty much be on autopilot from there, aside from the Foursquare check-in.
And I'll tell you a little bit, if you want, about the sort of the process of the scheduling and all that.
Yeah.
I was going to use Hootsuite, but I found out a couple of things. A, you can only schedule a tweet every 5 minutes, which seems reasonable for any normal person, but we have, you know, we have some really long scenes. We're just writing them like they would be in a script. So sometimes there's scenes that are like 60, 65 tweets. And if that was only happening every 5 minutes, that would be like a 7 hour scene. So that was going to be impossible. There's also like a finite number. You can only have like 350 tweets in this queue at any given time. And there was a limited number of accounts that you could have. So I wound up going with Social Oomph, which lets you have an unlimited, well, on the pro plan, but you have an unlimited number of social accounts, 5,000 tweets in the queue, and you know, to you can schedule them once every minute in intervals. So that's what we're using for the scheduling. Social Oomph is not so great for like managing the accounts and like, you know, interacting with other people. So I actually do have a Hootsuite Pro account as well. Now we're using that to like keep up with the individual accounts and who's, you know, who's tweeting at them. So that's sort of the overview of that. And of course we have, on our main Twitter account, Enter the Lodge, there we have a Twitter list, which has all of the characters that have thus far been introduced. And that's, so the best ways really to keep up with the story are either to subscribe to that list or go to our website on the story page, where we have all the storifies, in chronological order for people.
And when people, contact the characters, how do you respond? I mean, like story wise.
Well, I will say there hasn't been a lot of that yet. It's interesting. People have been pretty content to be, you know, kind of voyeuristic in the sense and watch it unfold. Which, I mean, we're happy to have people engage. That's just one more level of insanity that we have to find a way to manage, but certainly they respond in character and, and you know, it's sometimes the fans have information that the characters don't. So if they try to, you know, ask them questions about things they shouldn't know, we just ignore those messages.
Because I saw that you'd noted that on the site. You know, like if you look at these documents, remember the characters might not notice.
Oh, that's right, and that's one element we actually didn't mention, is that there's another avenue with supplemental materials, as you just mentioned, which are documents that we upload as PDFs. So there's a lot of like official transcripts from the FBI that often relate to Agent Cooper. There have been MRI results from a hospital, recordings of Dr. Jacoby's sessions with various patients. So that's another supplementary avenue we've been doing, either for scenes that we felt weren't quote unquote public and thus didn't deserve to be on Twitter, which is a public space, or just for things that were sort of wouldn't lend themselves to being full scenes.
And I think we can say now, without going into detail, that by the end of the fourth week, we're going to have some documents that are like a framing device that actually take place in the year 2014. So we'll get some glimpse into what's going on with some of the characters actually 25 years later. Won't go into detail about what that is, but that's going to be fun.
So you did actually, you know, like when you were writing this, you were thinking some of this, like the characters wouldn't have just tweeted this out. So we're going to, so they, you know, this information would be available somewhere else.
Yeah, we, you know, and some of that was a holdover from when we started. I was a real, I was really on making it like exactly like Twitter, and it quickly became clear that that was impossible. But yeah, especially when there was information that within that at story points certain characters didn't have, I thought it would be confusing for people if it was just there on Twitter for them to see, and then they'd be like, why did these characters not know that? So I think that was sort of the main divide. If there was something, if there was a plot point which was like that, there's something that's a mystery to most of the characters, we wanted to keep it off Twitter, but still, you know, let the fans know. And you know, it's interesting because you kind of just see the you know, you just see what everyone in the town sees. And also, I guess we didn't mention it's, I mean, it's sort of in real-ish time, which is kind of neat too. I mean, obviously the series itself wasn't, that was released, you know, on a weekly basis like any show. So it's been interesting.
And then when you, now when you came to write the tweets and everything, are you like, are you imagining conversations, or how, and like, are you just typing that straight into Social Oomph, or are you putting it into a spreadsheet or document or something?
Usually we, or I know I'll speak for myself, usually when I'm writing the scenes, I do write them straight into a spreadsheet, just to give a sense for, even though I'm, when I'm developing the scene, I'm thinking about it like you might write a screenplay or even a conversation in a novel, where the length of what they're saying doesn't actually matter. But the reason right. that I find it important to actually write in a spreadsheet is to like set up a tweet that's just about as long as it can be, so that you sort of have an eyeball test to make sure that what you're writing doesn't go beyond it, and then to right. actually try to write in roughly 140 or less pieces. And so, yeah. you know, that's why I've been doing it in the spreadsheet primarily in the first run through.
Yeah, I do as well, actually. The Microsoft Excel we've been using, and it's been indispensable because yeah, we have put in a formula that changes the text to red if it exceeds 140 characters, which is super helpful. And we'd also use that to, rather than, you know, add when we're coming up with what time these tweets are supposed to be released, rather than to type them in manually, you know, we have a formula that can just like auto increment things by a minute. And then lastly, I have a series of formulas that like convert the dates and times and tweets into the specific format that Social Oomph needs for their bulk upload file, which is also super important. So we've been sort of delving up those details. Like Patrick would come up with the times and stuff, and then he'd get it to me and I would run all these formulas. And yeah, basically I have to upload a separate text file for each account. And there are about 60 or so of those. And like I said, we're doing that once a week because we weren't able to get all 4 weeks done prior to our launch. So we've been a week ahead in any given moment. So of course we're finishing up some of the scenes, and of course we're dealing with the actual day to day of putting stuff up, which is actually a lot taxing itself. Like there's no way to schedule the Foursquare check-ins. We did create a bunch of fake Foursquare check-ins for places in the fictional town of Twin Peaks. So that has to be done live, those Foursquare check-ins. And then obviously on a daily basis, we need to create the Storifies as quickly as we can.
Which can be hard when we each work, not only when we each work at day jobs, but also in different time zones.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm just imagining the spreadsheet. Have you got characters in different columns? Because you need to like see across all the characters what's happening at any time.
Well, we write it in chronological order, just like a scene. But then after that's all locked, I will sort it by character. And then, yeah, because each text file that we bulk upload will be like, this is all the tweets from Agent Cooper, you know, and it has an exact date and time when that's scheduled to be tweeted. I will say, this is worth mentioning. So first of all, for people who don't know, you can't schedule an at message. So like you can't, on any of the platforms, you can't schedule a thing that starts with the at symbol. You can get around that by doing the thing where you use a period before the at symbol. But even then, we found out that Twitter gets a little bit leery of, too many scheduled tweets with at mentions. I suspect they read that like spam activity. And so on the second day, we noticed that we were getting some tweets kicked back. They were like, we didn't publish this one because you've scheduled too many at messages. So we had to basically, you know, fortunately we're paying attention when that happened. And we just said, all right, we're deleting these tweets. We're going to finish this scene manually. And then we're going to redo the whole sort of format, because basically, and the upshot of this is it's a little bit harder to follow it on Twitter unless you're following the Twitter group, the Twitter list, because we're only kind of using an at message to indicate when one character starts talking to a different character. So there's a lot of tweets. It's more like, I don't know if you saw the Reservoir Dogs. Somebody did Reservoir Dogs on Twitter a couple months ago, just like a line for line remake, and they didn't use at handles either. So we had to change that format and realize that, you know, really we're making it for the archive. You know, for in fact, it actually reads a little bit smoother on the Storify without the at handles, but we did have to change that. I'll tell you also, fortunately, I made most of these accounts like a couple of years ago.
Two years ago, I think.
And now Twitter is being a lot – now they're really vetting new accounts. And if they see something that they looks like fake, they will, ban it. And they're
– crush.
Yeah, and they're really on it, to the point where now I've had to like – you know, and again, I think they're doing it to stop spammers, which is not what we're doing. But at the same time, I didn't want to tip our hand about what we were doing. So – I've had to like actually kind of like put a picture of a person and send some tweets and follow some people and write a bio and actually create some fake people that have nothing to do with the story just to get it past the vetting. And then once they vet it and it looks like, okay, that looks good, then they never look at it again. And I can like just change everything and delete the tweets and change it to, you know, whatever character it is. But it's a lot tougher to make fake accounts these days.
Yeah, exactly. The spammers make everyone's life miserable, though, don't they? That's the thing. Trying to do like, because I think, you know, like it's a new form of creative expression. So you're adding value to the Twitter platform. But if you know, if they've got some sort of algorithm that's going through looking for abnormal behavior, like someone's telling a story on Twitter, you know.
Right.
And it was also difficult because, you know, as he said, it was lucky that he made most of these accounts 2 years ago because, you know, he was playing the long game and realized that we would be doing this eventually, even if we didn't know when yet. But it was harder for new characters that we were creating from scratch because their accounts couldn't be created until they had names, and we didn't necessarily name them 2 years ago. they were some of the hardest to create because even as we tried to recreate new accounts for them after they'd been suspended, they also was quite possible they were triggering because we kept using the same name because we were really attached to them already.
And not only that, like one fun thing we did is when we introduced new characters, we cast those characters with actors as certain actors that we thought would fit the series as they looked in 1989. so, you know, I almost feel like if I, you know, making a Dale Cooper account now would actually be allowed because they would know that it's like a story thing. Whereas in this case, we were making a character that no one knew was a character. And then we put a picture of like, Jonathan Banks. And then they'd be like, well, this is clearly a spam account. Like it was never heard of this before. Yeah. So it's tricky, but, you know, you learn workarounds.
And it seems to me that the reaction from fans has been good, but what's like the specifics that people have liked about it?
Well, I know, like I said, the one guy said he felt like he was part of the town. Another guy, there was this sort of louse of a character in the series named Leo Johnson, who was, and one of the characters, one of the fans tweeted at him and then he responded. And a few days later, that fan said to us, when Leo Johnson tweeted back at me, it was awesomely terrifying. So that was, that was nice. What are a few of the other ones, Ben?
I'm trying to remember. I know, you know, some people just do the sort of basic, you know, this is one of the greatest things I've seen in the internet in however long. It's a sort of general praise type deal. I know some people have just sort of enjoyed trying to communicate with people. I know, I think Ben has, we've had Ben Horn respond once or twice to some folks who tweeted at him.
It's some interesting. Yeah, I remember one person was like, what does it mean to be behind on watching a Twitter TV show? You know, people just wrapping their mind around. I mean, honestly, we've had, at first I didn't know quite how to refer to it. I mean, you know, like, it's kind of like, I mean, if you want to boil it down, it's kind of, it's like fan fiction. It's just, you know, that kind of a lot of times has a sort of a negative connotation. So it, you don't always want to like lump yourself into that. But I don't know. Like it was neat. It was neat. You know, I was glad. Yeah. So before the Reservoir Dogs thing, I know there was a thing called the Hill Valley Project where they made like 34 accounts and did Back to the Future on Twitter. So it was interesting to see that those had been done, but. You know, as I looked at what had been done, I was like, well, we have way more accounts and most of our content is new. So there's not, we hadn't really seen anything quite like this before. So that's exciting.
I know there was one person who responded on Twitter who I think, like Emmett, I think has said a few times that this is like the closest we've seen to negative commentary on Twitter itself, where the person just said, a Twitter story with around 50 separate Twitter accounts? No thanks, not for me.
Which, you know, absolutely a reasonable response.
I think it looks amazing. Have you had any reaction from David Lynch or the other guy, Mark?
No, it looks as though a guy named Harley Payton, who was one of the writers, is following Enter the Lodge. So he is at least aware of it. I don't know if he has passed that along to any of his other fellow writers on the show. I haven't heard any response from anyone in that camp yet. I'd certainly be curious to see what their response is if and when they get wind of it.
I know. Well, I think we've seen people, we've seen fans occasionally have tweeted either the main site or some of the handles at some of the creators and actors. I think someone send it at Ray Wise, possibly. I think somebody sent it to Kyle MacLachlan's Twitter. We have no idea if they're looking at it, but some fans have taken it upon themselves to try and spread the word.
We have yet to try to do any direct Twitter outreach to those people, but a couple of fans have like tried to alert some of those folks. But, you know, David Lynch has 2 million followers, and I shudder to think how many tweets he gets a day, and I don't even know if he runs his own Twitter account. So you never know what he's going to see.
Yeah, or how his reaction to it is. I mean, he didn't have a good reaction to the introduction of digital photography. And, you know, like I remember his quote about watching films on an iPad or on an iPhone at the time. So he's like, films on Twitter? Films should be like So, you never know, you know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that was another reason. Because we had, like I said, we had a longer story planned. But A, we decided we wanted to hit this anniversary. And B, we were like, well, If David Lynch hears about it and wants to shut us down, he is well within his rights to do so. So we decided we wanted to produce a finite amount of content. So in the event that that did happen, we wouldn't have like sunk an insanely more amount of effort into something. So you know, at this point, like we'll at least get through our 4 weeks, and then we'll play it by ear from there. But I'd be interested to see what he thinks about this. I mean, He's most of them have been pretty insistent that they have no intention of reviving it in a sort of a Dallas-like way or any way. So, you know, more and more people are learning these days that you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot to shut things like this down, because you're kind of like just hurting, you know, stomping on your biggest fans who are not making any money. They're just trying to draw more attention to your property. And, you know, it's, but
yeah, exactly.
You know, but not everybody is quite so up to date or enlightened on that. So
yeah, exactly. You never know. I mean, you guys are breathing new life into it. And I think you're introducing Twin Peaks to, you know, new generations who might never have. So fair enough that, let's say, like the majority of people that are on there, you know, like that are following right now, were fans of the original show. Like, I get that. But, you know, they work, you know, they're in social circles, and this podcast and the other press that you've done, that goes out to, you know, beyond the fans. And I think it's good. And like, if I was to, if I was to introduce Twin Peaks to, I don't know, like my nephews or something like that, maybe, you know, of course you'd say, like, go watch the, you know, go watch the series.
Oh,
but
yes.
this is something much more accessible because you can just forward the tweet or send them the web, you know, address, and it's happening now. And so it seems like more immediate rather than saying to them, go watch a show that was filmed in '90s.
Yes, and I've also been noticing, because obviously I've been sort of monitoring the Twitterverse for mentions of Twin Peaks pretty closely over this couple-week period, and it is nice to see, because for some time now, the entire series has been on Netflix, and there are definitely teenagers who are watching it for the first time because they have access on the streaming service there, and that's cool to see.
Which, compared to when we first watched the show, which was when a friend of Emmett's lent him the old stack of, I think, 6 or 7 VHS tapes, which were really poor quality, and didn't include the pilot because it was stuck in rights issues for so many years and couldn't be reproduced.
So when we first watched the series, because we didn't watch it in broadcast, so we had that VHS set that didn't have the pilot, but we didn't know that the pilot wasn't there. So the first thing we saw was the second episode, and we didn't know that it wasn't the first. We were very confused about why there was already this FBI agent in this town investigating this murder.
And then, like, no proper introductions for any character. They just all knew each other already.
Yeah, but you're like, that's a David Lynch film. That's, right, you know, like, exactly. You don't know. You don't know if it should start.
It was that much. It kind of...
You didn't, there's no reason to notice anything missing.
Yeah.
So, what do you... like, what's your expectations then at the end of the 4 weeks? Like, what's a good outcome for you guys, and, you know, what's next?
Well, you know, I'm still trying to get something going in, as a TV writer. But like I said, I've also really been involved in the transmedia community here in LA. I'm on the leadership team for this group, meetup group called Transmedia Los Angeles, and we have monthly meetups where we have panel discussions and sort of mixers and just try to educate people about transmedia storytelling and sort of, you know, facilitate interesting new kind of transmedia stories. So, you know, I also just love using these forms to tell stories and finding new interesting things to do with them. So I would also, you know, I've got a lot of balls in the air, I'm a writer first and foremost, and I'm trying to get something going in one of those avenues, but I would be super happy to get, you know, pulled on to some actual franchise, because more and more of them are starting to delve into this kind of transmedia extension of their properties. And there are a number of sort of like transmedia ad agencies that specialize in, you know, that are hired by various franchises to sort of build out this transmedia world. So I would be perfectly happy to sort of be able to quit my day job and do things like this for actual money that were actually authorized.
And you would see like that as a social media writer for social media.
Yeah, that would be, I would, you know, if that became my career, I couldn't be happier. That would, I really enjoy it. I like the real time. I like the fan interaction, and you know, yeah, so that's the sort of something that's interested on my end.
And I know, you know, for me, you know, I'm also an aspiring writer, and, you know, I've dabbled in various things. You know, I've dabbled in prose, especially in college. I've dabbled in screenplay, but really what I love most about storytelling is long-term storytelling and sort of ongoing stories. So I think the thing that's already been the most fulfilling about this project to me is that because we're basically treating it like a season of a television show, we've just not only been able to develop this content, but also produce it. And right now it's in the process of actually going out. So there will be a product, and, you know, that's very unusual. If you think about TV writing, you would write a spec script to try and get a job, or you'd write a single script out of however many, but basically it's just the two of us with some help along the way trying to create all of this. And at the end of the day, it's going to be out there. We had some of the write-ups from before we announced who we were, like AV Club. I had a friend of mine who knew that we were doing this. He was actually the one who told us when AV Club posted their article about it. And he just like contacted me online and was like, dude, did you see this? and then after that, just knowing that people were reading it, you know, that alone is a great feeling. And, you know, hopefully over the next few weeks we can drum up more, and hopefully after that even more people will continue to find it, and there might be, you know, more and more viewers over time. Like Emmett said earlier, we definitely have more long-term plot planned, and we would love to see more and more and more get produced. But it is so time-consuming, especially since it's mostly just been the two of us, that we definitely need a good amount of lead time and probably some more help.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, because right now it's all, you know, everyone can enjoy it for free and there's no payment. It's very obviously a fan fiction thing. And if, you know, you could imagine that the next stage might be like a Kickstarter campaign to do like a season, you know, the season four or, you know, whatever you might call the next thing. But then it could get a little bit tricky. I know that people, you know, raise money to do sort of Star Wars films and this type of thing. But
exactly. Yeah, it is dubious, though. That would be kind of leery to do that. So yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Because to that degree, it really is a labor of love. Like, if there's more beyond this, it's because everyone who's doing it wants to see more content and wants it to be out there, and because we know that the people who are reading it want more.
Yes,
and yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I was looking today. We've had something like 8,000 unique visitors to the site, and something like 20% return rate, some people are coming back to see it, and the Twitter list has about 300 followers, so I suspect at least those 300 people are reading all of it, which is crazy, again, because 5,000 tweets all in all said and done, but people are definitely addicted to it. They've said, they've used those words. I remember one person tweeted, "Oh, why did I have to find this the day before I had to write a huge paper?"
Exactly, yeah. I know, exactly. I think what's been really, what really struck me when I saw it was the use of Storyfy, you know, so that, you know, if you come in, people listening to this podcast, you know, this has been out for a while, but you can bring yourself up to speed because you've got those archives there.
And, you know, I was really hoping when we got the site running and a friend of Emmett's, who's a really great web designer, was able to set it up for us. And I was really hopeful that we would be able to allow people to search by day so that people could look at them a day at a time if they wanted to see it as an episode, or at least they could remember where they left off and not have to go through every single page. And so it was really great that we were able to get not only that functionality, but the functionality of sorting by character, so that if someone just said, well, today I want to read every scene that Sheriff Truman is in, like, they can click that and just sort of read his personal story progression as it continues.
Yes. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think I've been following the work that Janet Murray's been doing, looking at these kind of like multi-character shows where you might be able to reorganize the scenes into just show me the scenes with Dale Cooper. And, yeah, you know, so... Yeah, it'd be cut, and it's interesting that you've written it from a spreadsheet and uploaded it, because with this storytelling, you've got the creative side, but then you've got the fact that there's so many intricacies. It's basically like a big database, you know. And it would be nice to be able to sort by any slant that you wanted to put scenes with Dow and the Log Lady in, you know, like, yeah, in the coffee shop or something.
Yeah, it's like Clue.
but it's true. I mean, that's another element, you know, on top of the sort of it being a giant database, not only were we working in Excel generally, but in order for us each to be writing content and also make it easy for us to be able to approve or edit content the other had written, we were also using Google Drive and Google Documents and Google Spreadsheets so that we could each access them and be, you know, editing them real time in that degree. So on top of every other piece of spreadsheet, we were actually working within the same one, were and are working within the same ones a lot.
Really good. Really good. And what I like as well, I agree with you completely that it's much better to get something out there and seeing the reaction from the fans and then knowing that you're doing something of value, and like the whole experience of putting this together is very rewarding, rather than you know, the alternative, which is writing something and trying to get someone to read it. It's like, well, you know, the internet's out there. I can just go for it and put it out there.
Yeah. You know, it was, and, you know, again, we made, not only did we decide to be anonymous at first, but we also decided to not do any advanced press, just in, because basically the theory was we want the fans to find it first and for it to become popular. And then if anyone tries to shut us down, it's harder to do. But as a result, like for the first week and a half, we had like maybe 40 people who were coming to the website. And then, you know, and then a friend of ours sort of sent the link over to AV Club and they picked it up. And then, you know, it was like, it went from like 40 to like 4,000, you know, like time. So it was, so the first week and a half, just, you know, we're just doing this daily trudge of getting it all out there and, you know, not sure when or if any people were going to find it. So it definitely was exciting once they did, and certainly gave us more of a shot in the arm, you know, just to keep, you know, get it all out.
Really good. All right then, guys, thank you very much for being on the show. Where can people, where should people go, and how can they find you both if they need to?
Well, the website is enterthelodge.com. The primary Twitter account is twitter.com/enterthelodge, and that Twitter list I mentioned is there, which should let people find all of the characters if they are interested in following them.
And there's also, on the Enter the Lodge site, on the characters page, there's sort of six basic intro characters that anyone who knows the show would be familiar with, and you can reach their six Twitter handles there as well and spread out from there.
Yeah, and again, my name is Emmett Fury, so that's my name on Twitter. That's EmmettFury.
And I'm Patrick Fury. On Twitter, I am at Trick Fury, so Patrick Fury, but then take away the P and the A, so TrickFury.
Fantastic. That's really good, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks for everything.